And we're with Gary Gillespie as we talk about his work, Chronicles of the Unexplained, True Stories of Haunted Houses, Bigfoot, and Other Paranormal Encounters. We're going to come back in a moment. We're going to take your phone calls with him next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, Gary Gillespie with us here. We'll get to your calls in just a moment. Gary, so one of your actual stories, and of course the story that scared the living daylights out of you, was the hauntings going on in the house that you were born in, brought up in. Does your family still have that house?
No, it had left the family in the early 1970s. And ironically, just within the last 4 months, I've relocated the family cemetery and the old homestead, and I'm going to be trying to get a hold of the property is held in trust, a living trust now, and I would like to be able to have access back to our family cemetery. But the last time I was there was in 1972, I believe it was. I was young. I was shorter than the grass that was growing on the property.
Who do you think was doing the haunting?
Well, we believe it was one of the Gillespie boys. Not quite so sure that it was my great-great-grandfather, but we believe it might have been his brother. The property had been sold out of the family, and a Marine had purchased the property. He and his wife had owned it and immediately had gotten in contact with the family on some things that started happening around the property. And it was a very friendly entity, according to them. The description sure matched, you know, a family member.
But you did not think this was friendly during your days.
No, with the house that we had purchased in Grand Junction, Colorado, that's the one that wasn't friendly. We had purchased a house there in 2006, and that's where we really had.
Okay, so the one when you were younger wasn't that bad.
No, it wasn't that bad. My aunt and my grandmother had lived together, and of course they had owned a property in Orange County, Virginia, that had trench fortifications on the property, and of course it was all overgrown by trees. And you know, so when we go back and visit in May every year, we would hear an entire 11 and a half months of stories every time we went back. And I think that's kind of what got me into the storytelling phase of my life, or at least planted the seed.
Sure.
It was very scary for a youngster to try to sleep in those houses in those days.
So with Grand Junction's house, what do you think was going on there?
Well, I can't only describe it as evil.
Pure evil?
Whatever it was particularly attached to my daughter, we feel. You know, originally it was the dogs that were picking up on it. And, of course, I was so busy at work, you know, I would just kind of blow it off. You know, oh, we're just imagining things or whatever. But after 2 years in the house, I kind of started looking back at what was going on and realizing that there was really something there. From the first night that my family moved in, we had issues with the property. And one kind of weird story is that it was the first night for my kids to sleep in the house, and then their mattresses were just on the floor. They had chosen their bedrooms and everything, and my daughter woke up in the morning with, she was a collector of Briar horses, and all of her horses were stood up and encircled her entire mattress on the floor and all looking at her. Well, we saw her go to bed. There was no way on earth, you know, we didn't even know where the box of Briar horses was. And so she woke up in the morning kind of laughing and saying, all right, who did this? And we walked in and said, it sure wasn't us.
Wow. Was anybody ever hurt in the house?
Yes, they were. My son was hurt. We had some very freakish type accidents going on while we were trying to remodel the house. I myself started having some really bad medical type situations. It felt like heart attacks. I'd gone to the ER 3 times, you know, with blood pressure that's just off the charts. And when I would lay there in cardiac care, the blood pressure come back down, everything would be fine. Tests would come back great. But I was experiencing a lot of anxiety, couldn't sleep in the house, very uncomfortable.
Well, panic attacks?
Definitely. Yeah, I believe that's what they were. Yeah, I couldn't sleep in the house, basically, but I could lay across the seats in my welding truck 100 miles away from home and sleep like a baby. You know, it seemed like that's where I would catch my sleep, was either in my welding truck or in my semi-truck somewhere. But when I came home, it was very difficult. Between 2 and 3 a.m. seemed to be the magic numbers in that house for things that would go wrong.
Typical.
logging in, or, you know, doors opening and closing, fire alarms going off, that kind of stuff.
You glad you're out of that situation?
Very much so. Yeah, whatever it was, it didn't want to be removed from the property, and we couldn't fix it.
Let us go to the call. Susan is going to be our first truck driving in Ohio. Go ahead, Susan.
Hi, George. It is such a pleasure to finally talk to you.
Well, thank you. I'm glad you got in.
I love this show. I never miss it. But this is it's not really so much a question, but something that I experienced myself that I just couldn't believe. Happened in 2002. I was lying in bed about half awake, half asleep, right in that little realm area there. And I saw myself standing on my back porch looking out at my garage. We had a detached garage, and we had privacy fences down both sides. And all I could see were two black shadows moving in front of it. And I knew who they were. I knew it was my dad and my brother. And all I kept thinking was, where is Dad and Dale going? Where are they going? And as I started towards them, my brother was waving to me. And he started, like, waving, like, pushing me back. And he was saying, no, you stay here. You'll be fine. You stay here. You'll be fine. And they just slowly moved across the garage and went around the corner, like, out into the alley. And I kept thinking, what in the world? And I woke up. And I went to the restroom. And it wasn't even 3 minutes later, my sister's boyfriend was knocking on my door to tell me that my brother had had a massive aneurysm and died.
Oh, my God.
Wow. Yeah.
And it was like my older brother was always my protector. And my father had died 10 years before this. My brother died in April, and my dad died actually in May. So it was like my dad came to take him, but he was telling me, no, you stay here. It was like he was saying goodbye to me in a way.
Yeah, it's not
your
turn.
And no matter what happens, you'll be fine. He was always, you know, he was my big brother. He was always my protector and everything. And he was like, no, you'll be okay. But it was like I was going to follow them. And he was like, no, it's not your time. You stay here.
I love that story. Thanks, Susan. Why is it sometimes, Gary, that the loved ones who have passed on will try to protect the ones that are still living?
Oh, I feel that intensely. Ironically, my mother had a very similar event to what this gal had just described with my father and my grandfather, or her grandfather, I should say. But it was more like there was a piece of glass between them, and she couldn't follow. But her grandfather came and walked away with my father. And very intense, very intense. And yeah, I do feel that there is an attempt at communication there, and how I liken it is be it protection or advice or whatever it is, I liken it as a parent-child relationship, if you will. Just we've been through it, I'm sure, you and I. Just imagine trying to explain something to your child over and over and over again, but you don't get it. And the whole time there's a communication barrier there that you can't make yourself clear to that child. And that's how I see some of this communication that I've experienced, that I've heard about, and I've researched, that if that entity is trying, or that ghost, that spirit is trying to communicate with us, they just can't seem to get their point across most of the time. And it's got to be, it's difficult. It's very difficult. You always worry, what's the message? What am I missing?
I don't like walking through a cemetery at night. Do you?
I wouldn't call it a great pastime. No, everybody needs their rest, right?
not that I do it at any regular basis, I'll tell you that.
Right, yeah, I certainly wouldn't make a habit of it.
Let's go to Carlos, west of the Rockies, truck driving in Spokane, Washington. Hello, Carlos, go ahead.
Hello, gentlemen, good evening, good morning.
Hello.
You
I've
too,
been
sir.
Listening since 1980, and this is my second time on.
Perfect.
I've had two incidents, one in El Paso at a theater, the Plaza Theater. I've had like someone standing behind me, and I turned around, and no one there. And boy, as a kid, 8 years old, is that scary or what? Giving me chills now.
Sure is.
The second time, George, I went to the Queen Mary in 1972. We went through the tour, and we went down where the soldiers were, I guess when they were bringing up from the First World War.
Yep.
We were going down some stairs, and then to the right, we went down some other stairs. And George, again, I'm getting in chills. I felt like if someone was right behind me. And boy, that scared the bejeebies out of me. Now, my question is to Greg. Now, if I was to go back, would I feel the same? Would they recognize me? And would I still feel their presence? And I'll take your answers off the air.
All right, Carlos, thanks, and you drive safely. Gary, let me ask you, when this is going on, how many times will they haunt you or help you? More than once? I mean, would they recognize him if he went back?
Well, I would imagine that would depend. Who is it? You know, who are they trying to contact? Is it a random contact? I would have to say I couldn't answer that one with any degree of accuracy. I would imagine in those situations, maybe not. You know, it didn't really seem like it could have been a family member, you know. But I think in those cases, it's almost like somebody's tugging on your shirt tail. You know, hey, recognize me type situation.
They could be different ghosts, right?
Yes, correct.
Let's go to Mary in Phoenix. Mary, welcome to the program. You're up with us. Go ahead.
Thank you, George. I just wanted to thank you for having Dr. Lipton on last night, too.
Oh, sure thing.
Lady. They were both just excellent. And mine's kind of a two-part, and I'll try to be quick. In 1990, 4 days before Christmas, I left the office, and I went to a mall and went into the Borders bookstore, and it was just insanely, you know, long lines and everything else and packed. And I got my stuff and was standing in line. And I started to notice people were staring over my direction. And I thought, what's going on? So I'm looking around kind of, you know, whatever. And then I kind of tried to sheepishly look behind me a little bit. And then I noticed there was like this giant guy behind me. And I looked up and I recognized him right off. And so I turned back down and looked down. And it was Dennis Farina. And he kind of towered over me and leaned over me. And he said, are you a nurse? And I said, no, I'm a medical office manager. And then we just started talking. And like I said, the lines were so long, we ended up talking for almost 25 minutes, and it was just really open, and he was so down to earth, and we had quite a bit in common. He was a, you know, policeman in Chicago, and I grew up the early part of my life in Chicago, and we went to a lot of the same places in Wisconsin in the summer and this and that, and it was just like we'd known each other for 20 years. I'm not kidding you. He was so open, so friendly, and just incredibly trusting. And we just really had some kind of bond. It was amazing. People were staring. We didn't care. The manager came over and introduced himself and asked for an autograph, and he was very gracious about
it. Yeah, he's the TV star, right?
Yes, from Law & Order.
Yeah.
He also hosted the, I think it was Unexplained Mysteries or something.
Mm-hmm.
And anyway, and this was before he was, you know, a really big star, but I'm sure he was the same when he got a lot more well-known. I get the impression it was his character. He just, you know, was incredibly... humble, and he was just a quintessential gentleman. He had on his, you know, signature camel coat, and his hair was all coiffed and everything, but he was just so friendly and open, and we just had this incredibly profound, you know, conversation. It really was deep, and there was nothing hesitant or shallow about it. We didn't talk about the weather or anything like that. It was just really an amazing thing. And so then I was leaving, you know, we said goodbye, and he shook my hand real warmly and everything, and, you know, when I was going out the door, because I was ahead of him in line a little bit, you know, I turned around to see if he was looking at me, and he did. And I waved and mouthed, you know, Merry Christmas, and him too. And then I left and went out the door. Well, 2 years ago, I'm sitting in my living room, and I'm reading a book, and I hadn't turned on the radio or the TV for 2 days. And I'm just reading this book, and I'm suddenly aware that there's somebody else, you know, in the room with me and right in front of me, sitting on the couch. And it was Dennis. And I was like, oh, my Lord, what's going on here? Dennis, what are you doing here? And he didn't say a word. He did not say a word. And he just had this incredibly big, warm smile and looked me right in the eyes. And I'm still just, you know, just agog, just going, what's going on? And he just really smiled. And then he had this kind of sad look in his eyes. And then he turned and looked to the middle of my living room. And so I did too. And so it was like bizarre. I'm not kidding. It was so bizarre. It was like a screen or something went down in the middle of my living room. I couldn't see the end of the wall or any of the furniture beyond that, you know. And suddenly it was just like a holographic movie. Everything that was said between us that night, everything that took place, the manager, you know, introducing to everything, the people carrying their books and everything else was replayed to a T. It was incredible. I was just absolutely mesmerized watching this, and everything was replayed. So it took about 25 minutes. And so when I go to the glass doors and I turn around and wave goodbye to him, then it all just disappeared from my living room.
That is an amazing story, Mary, because Dennis, of course, died of a blood clot back in 2013. He came back. I love that story, Gary.
Yeah, I do too. It sounds like a very strong form of residual energy, doesn't it?
Sure does. It sure does. You've heard stories, of course, of ancient ghost stories of truck drivers picking up some girl who was hitchhiking, and then she wanted to be left off at a cemetery. And ooh, those are spooky too, aren't they?
Yes, they are. And boy, do I love stories from truckers. I've been in the industry
all my life,
interacted with these people my entire life. They're some of the best people you will ever know in your entire life. And but you know, those long hours on the road, driving across the desert in blizzards and tornadoes and rainstorms, it's just a breeding ground for weird stories, that's for sure.
Let's go to George outside of one of your areas, Central City, Colorado, first-time caller. Go ahead, George.
George, I have appreciated your show for a while. Thank you so much.
You are very welcome.
And Gary, I'd like to, after we speak, connect with you, because I do have a couple of questions about some places in Net that you might be able to verify or quantify.
Great.
But you know, in going to Central City, living in Gilpin County, and I'd go to the Central City. I'd go to the county court building.
Uh-huh.
Which is a really old building. And you walk up those steps, and I can kind of feel something, you know, because I need to register my vehicles.
Oh, yeah.
Deal with getting my building permits in that building. And as soon as you start walking up those steps, you just start feeling something.
Oh, definitely. That's a very active building, George. It's I have got hours of interviews concerned with that building and the people that have worked in it.
What do you think happened in that building, Gary?
Well, there's a lot that may have happened in that building. For sure, boy, I could go back. It would take a long time to explain it. But I had a great interview with a man that was working for the county, Gilpin County, and actually maintained that building through several years.
But somebody or some buddies obviously died there?
Some buddies, yes. And I think there were several detected contacts in that building. The guy that I had interviewed, and along with the Spirit Realm investigation crew, had done several investigations in that building, and all resulted in a lot of activity. I think my favorite cute little story from that building, there's several. One.
Hold on. We'll grab it when we come right back on Coast to Coast AM. And we're going to come back in a moment with Gary Gillespie, author, of course, of the book Chronicles of the Unexplained, and take your final calls here on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, Gary Gillespie with us, of course. And Gary, you were going to tell us a story, and let's get into it before we go to more calls. Go ahead.
Yes, actually, our previous caller had mentioned the courthouse in Central City, Colorado, which if he didn't sense something in that building, I would probably question it. You know, there's an old legend that there may have been a co-conspirator to a large gold heist in town buried in the walls of that building. The most active area of that building is obviously, well, it's the jail. Many contacts down there, and some of them not very friendly. Surveillance cameras in that building have picked up movement. I don't want to give away too many spoilers here, but a fire detection company was there doing maintenance on the alarm system in the building, and one of their employees said they'll never come back to the building again. It became more real when the Justice Center was built and moved to Black Hawk. I think that was back in about 1995, and everybody moved out of the courthouse, basically, that was related to law enforcement. The jail and everything moved over there, but they didn't have their electronics up and running yet, so the dispatchers had to stay in the basement of the old courthouse for several weeks while they were getting the communication system installed. And of course, when the building was locked down at night, the night dispatchers started hearing a lot of action in the floors above them and calling officers in to kind of check the building, because they knew they were supposed to be in there by themselves, but they were definitely hearing people walking around on the floors above them. So yeah, it's a very interesting building. It's very ironic that this caller would bring that up, but yeah, it's a real hot spot.
Well, it sure is. Okay, let's go back to the final calls. Joe's in the Bronx and now on Coast to Coast. Hey, Joe, go ahead.
Hi. Yes, I'd like to ask Gary. Now, are there any, let me just start with this. About maybe a decade ago, I seen a show that dealt with Lincoln assassination memorabilia. It was a John K. Latimer collection.
Mm-hmm.
He has a large collection. Now, are there any stories of maybe items of such nature creating hauntings?
Yes, I have heard several accounts of objects bringing unwanted entities with them. I myself am very conscious of that. You know, I'd be very careful about what I purchase at an antique store and stuff like that. Maybe I'm just a little paranoid, but I have definitely talked to people who have insisted that the purchase of an old piece of furniture, an old bed, a piece of jewelry has brought something along with it that they didn't want. So, in some cases, I would be very afraid to touch items that may have been associated with a murder or, those sorts of things. But that's just me.
Yeah, but they are haunted. They are haunted, Gary.
I believe they are, yeah.
Let's go to Mark in San Antonio, Texas. Hi, Mark. Go ahead, sir.
Oh, man, I love you, George. Y'all picked a good subject, man.
We did.
I'm here in San Antonio, Texas, and I live here in Lakeside.
Aha, okay.
In a residential area. And when me and my sister was growing up, this is weird. And I'm glad you said you don't think of us as being weird.
Nope.
We were growing up, and we heard something at the door. We saw two kids. And I asked one of them, hey, I was startled. Hey, what's up? And these kids were like, can we come inside? I said, no, I can't let you inside. What's up? I kept asking them, what's up? They were scraggly. The sun was kind of down. And that's when we saw these kids, right? And they wouldn't look at you for the likes of me. They just didn't look at you. It was always looking down. And my sister said, can I help you? No, can we just come inside? No, can't let you inside. Did something happen to you? No, we just want to come inside. I'm going to have to call my father. And no, you don't have to call your father. Let me call him up because we can't let you inside. And we kept asking them, and all they wanted to do was come inside.
Yep.
And it was weird. This was the weirdest thing. When my sister went to go call our father over the phone, I just barely turned my back. It wasn't even that long. She was talking to our father, and they were still at the door. I turned my back, toward the door, said, they're gone. My sister goes, where'd they go? Act like they needed help. They were trying to get inside. They weren't trying to get inside. They were asking to come inside. So we ran down the street. My dad was still on the phone. We ran down the street because we thought these kids needed help. And looked over the fence, looked in the backyard. And there was no way they could have gone that quick. No way. It's impossible.
They just disappeared.
They just disappeared, man. I was like, what was that about?
Thank God, Mark, you didn't let them inside the house. I always wonder, though, Gary, why the kids just don't rush the house rather than ask to come in. I guess there's something to be done with inviting them in, isn't there?
Bingo. Yeah. I think it was something you didn't want, seeking an invitation to come into your house. Yep.
Once they get in, look out.
That's right.
Let's go to Fred, truck driving in South Carolina, east of the Rockies. Hey, Fred, thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Yeah, what great timing. I'm just coming through Savannah, Georgia right now, the home of the Garden of Good and Evil, huh?
You got it.
Yeah. Hey, the story I've got, years ago, I came off a cruise down there in Jacksonville, North Carolina. And celebrations that previous day, and we all went to bed. And about 4 o'clock, maybe 4:30, when the sun was just about coming up, we hear this curdling scream from my niece downstairs. She comes running up. I mean, running up. Boom, 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 boom. We jump out of bed, come down. I saw Grandpa. I saw Grandpa. The rockers. The rockers rocking back and forth. So we come down there, and we turn around, and she's white as a ghost. And we go around the corner, and here's this rocker just starting to slow down.
Oh.
And a couple years just before we got married, my wife was telling me a story that up in her house, a Civil War house, where the rooms were identical, built on a rock, solid wall rocks, and up in Virginia, Clifton Forge, Virginia, that she saw her dad standing in the room looking over her, checking on her. So we figured that it might have been her dad checking on her again in a new place, Jacksonville, North Carolina.
That's probably very, very possible. Fred, thanks for those stories. Two great stories.
Yes,
indeed. I, you know, truck driver stories are incredible.
They are. They are. You bet. They see a lot. You know, if you compare them to other people, you know, normal 8-to-5 working people, they probably have lived 3 times by the time they reach retirement compared to a normal office worker. You know, they just see so much in a lifetime.
We've got Rich now, truck driving on I-5 in California. Hey, Rich, go ahead.
Hey, George, so great to talk to you. I listen to you every night.
Thank you.
Hey, I've got a story that actually it blew my mind. I was back in 1992, I was on I-20 in Texas, in Marshall, Texas, at exit 617. And I saw a woman standing on the side of the road waving. So I pulled over and got out, and there was nobody there. So I didn't even think about it again. You know, I just went on my way. And I guess about 12 years later, I was sitting in a truck stop in Marshall, Texas, and listening to a driver telling a story about an accident that happened at the 617 back in the 20s, before it was an interstate highway, where a man was changing his tire and got hit by a drunk driver.
Ugh.
And then
the worst.
He says that occasionally people see his wife on the side of the road trying to call for help. So this was 12 years later that I heard this story.
Wow.
And it just sent chills up and down my spine.
Oh, my gosh.
Classic story of the highway.
Yeah, absolutely.
Sure is. Well, watch those roads, Rich. You never know what's out there. Old Twilight Zone thing, hitchhiker.
Yes.
You'd go up by him, and he'd look at you and go, going my way? And you just keep driving. Don't stop.
Exactly.
Another truck driver. We've got Scott in Texas. Hey, Scott, go ahead.
Driver, I listen to you every night. It's like having a best friend sitting here.
Well, thank you, Scott. And get real close to your phone if you can, or your speaker.
Okay. Ironically, I'm in Marshall, Texas right now.
Okay.
And I was on a little family trip this weekend. I got me and my wife, and we went to a little town called Jefferson, Texas. And they represent themselves as being the most haunted town in Texas, and they have a little ghost wall. I've been on it a couple of times, and I, me and my wife, after the walk, we were kind of walking around looking at some of the buildings, and there's an old bank building there that, of course, is closed up. There's chains on the doors, so the doors, they don't actually close. There's about a two-inch gap there, and we had our camera. We're taking pictures, and I stuck my camera up to the door and took a picture and looked at it, and I got a face.
Wow.
I want to see that picture, Scott. Email it to me at george@coasttocoastam.com. Have you ever, Gary, gotten a strange picture?
Yes, I have. Towards the end of our time in our house in Grand Junction, my mother had taken three photos of my son and his girlfriend on prom night. My wife and I were working in North Dakota in the oil fields up there, and she sent the pictures to us, and one picture came out perfect. Two pictures came out with two very visible entities in them, and we had tried to recreate the pictures for the book, but they're just too pixelated to really transfer into book form. But I still have them here on the computer, and it sure made a believer out of me. Yep.
Well, it sure does. So what's your next step? What do you do now that you've got Chronicles of the Unexplained done?
George, I'm going to move forward. I've got some ideas for one book I've already started, and it is directly related to the trucking industry and how we were, how we lived, basically in my time in trucking, the 70s, the 80s, the 90s, and early 2000, and what we'd experienced in that industry. But I have got a lot of love for Central City, Colorado, and I want to devote an entire book just to Central City, Colorado. I think
that's doable.
Just something I have to do.
Sure, understand. Let's go to Dee now in Los Angeles. Hi, Dee, go ahead.
Just wanted to tell you, I've been to Central City, rode up there on choppers. A whole line of choppers, beautiful bikes, years ago. I wanted to tell you, I was very close to my dad. It's two stories, but I'll tell you one and I'll tell you the other if you have time. But my dad, he passed away before I could get to where he was. And I just couldn't get over it. I was just so guilty for not getting there. And I was moving back into L.A. I was in a motel, me and my dog. She died 6 months after my dad. But I was just on the bed with the light dim, just sitting there. I know I was just feeling miserable because my dad was gone and I hadn't got there. In front of my face, a circle, like a porthole, it just opened up. And my dad had the most beautiful smile on his face. He was just smiling at me, never said anything. He was just glowing, and he looked so healthy and happy, and he had passed away at 92 years old. He had been on dialysis 11 years, had strokes. He was handsome for always, but now he looked like a young man, and he was just smiling, and I just said, Daddy, and I'm just looking at him grinning. And all I could do is just look at my dad and just look at the joy and the health in his face. And then I noticed, after I just looked at him for a while, I realized there was this beautiful background, and I started trying to see the background, looking past his face, looking at the background, and it was color like nothing you would see on this planet. I mean, it was so rich and vibrant, but that doesn't really describe it. And when I started really trying to see past him, the circle closed up. But I was able to see my dad, and I realized he's saying to me, don't feel guilty. You know, that he's happy, he's not in pain anymore, anything. And I knew, and a couple of years before my dad passed away, I was in California, and he was in the Midwest, and I called him every night. And I had a friend over, and my friend, a recording artist, a really well-known recording artist, my background's in the music business, he wanted to talk to my dad because my dad was a great golfer. And so I said, let me call him up. This is New Year's Eve, and my dad's a senior. He's not going up. So the phone would ring. And
well, we got a big beep coming from you, Dee. This is a wonderful night for phones, is it not? But we got your first story in. And Gary, I want to thank you for being on the program. Appreciate it. Good luck with everything. Chronicles of the Unexplained. For Dan Galante, Gina Salvati, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Laudasaur, Stephanie Smith, Chris Borelson, George Knapp. I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. I'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.